Accession number 31054, Reel 1.
Mr. Walter Foster, Reel 1. So if I could ask you then to tell me something about your life in Vienna, I believe, before war started. Your sort of early years, do you have much recollection of these, Mr. Foster?
Yes. What would you like to know?
Tell me about your family, your parents, and perhaps your grandparents as well.
I did not have very much contact with my grandparents. My father's parents lived in Poland at the time. My mother's parents lived in another part of Vienna. And I saw them on high holidays and very, very rarely.
How about your parents?
I wrote about my parents in my book. There's very little I can add.
But if people haven't read the book and are listening to this, what did your father do?
My father had a woodworking factory. Which originally had two sides to it. One was the manufacture of high quality drawing instruments, set squares for architects and that sort of thing. High quality stuff, which was made out of very rare woods, and which was sold mainly overseas.
So was your family a well-to-do?
The other part was the building of horse-drawn carts, wagons. It was called the Klosterneuburger Wagenfabrik, Klosterneuburg being a small town to the north of Vienna, and the Wagenfabrik, the wagon factory, Wagen being horse-drawn. And I remember very well the beautiful pieces of wood that go into the making of wheels in particular.
Yes, that must have been so interesting, that era, yes, of woodwork. I imagine then your family were quite well-to-do, were they? Fairly...
By the standards of the time, we were very well-to-do, yes. When I went to school, my secondary school grammar schools, well, there were state schools, and there was a system of, they were fee paying, but the fees were graded according to income of parents. And I remember that I was quite embarrassed by being only one of two boys in my class who were required to pay the full fee because my parents' income was regarded as being pretty high.
Do you remember any anti-Semitism as you were growing up?
Do I indeed? Our teachers at school were all of them, without exception, were all Nazis. And they made the few Jewish boys feel that we were not loved, to say the least. And of course, my school fellows were also anti-Semitic.
Were you ever physically attacked by anyone during this phase, you know, the anti-Semitism?
I do not recall an actual attack, but it was always threatened. And we talk nowadays here so much of youth gangs. But when I went to school, there was one gang that was the Nazis. And so the few Jews had to organize themselves in another gang in order to resist. And to resist we did. And quite shocking when one thinks back of it. We were all seriously armed, both gangs.
What
we habitually, we didn't actually carry guns, but we all had knives. And one of the early things I learned was the art of boxing. In order to be better able to resist.
Did you understand, as you were growing up and experiencing this, the political events happening around you, particularly in Germany, next door your neighbour?
Yes. I remember well Hitler coming to power in Germany and how it was discussed at the time at home. And we were we took it for granted that it was only a question of time before it would come to us as well.
Of course, if I remember rightly, Austria had a lot of political upheavals itself, didn't
yes.
it? A lot going on, I imagine, between the different political groups.
When I was 4 years old, there was the first little civil war. When I remember seeing troops marching to deal with the riots in Vienna. And when I was 11 years old, there was the real civil war going. And the rattle of machine guns was one of the earliest sounds I remember.
you remember the Anschluss, the takeover by Hitler?
Yes, sir. Very much. In every detail.
Could you describe to me what you knew of it and experienced?
Well, we were very... I was 15 years old at the time, but I and my contemporaries were very, very much politically aware. We had followed with great interest the various early wars of the time. The first one was the Japanese in Manchuria, then the Italian invasion of Abyssinia, Ethiopia nowadays, but we called it Abyssinia in those days. And and even more, the Spanish Civil War. We followed all these. We all had maps where we put the positions of the opposing armies with pins with different colored heads. So by the time of the Anschluss, we were practiced. And the Austrian newspapers didn't tell us very much, but we spent our pocket money buying foreign newspapers. And the Times in particular reported in great detail the different stages. When the Austrian Prime Minister Schuschnigg was ordered to go see Hitler in Berchtesgaden, the Times reported that in great detail, and we were ashamed that our Prime Minister appeared to be giving in to Hitler without much resistance.
Did you manage to gauge the sort of atmosphere of the public in general regarding Hitler? You know, would you say they were welcomed, the Nazis, by a sizable portion of people?
Yes. Austrian politics always was and still is divided into three lots. One, the Social Democrats, Vienna, the city administration always had been for many years a social democratic administration that's opposed by the conservative Catholic and the third lot, the German nationalists. It's still like that today. the German nationalist was, of course, taken over by the Nazis. And the Catholic, they're the people who invented political anti-Semitism. It is said that Hitler learned his anti-Semitism and how to use it in politics when he saw how it worked in Vienna.
Did you see anything of the arrival of the Germans when they came in and how they were greeted?
Yes. I remember that on the eve the afternoon before it actually happened, on my way home from school, I had quite a long journey from school. I travelled by tram. There was a sort of feeling of excitement in the air. There were lots of swastika flags everywhere and lots of men in uniform with swastika armbands walking in the streets. All sorts of uniforms, brown uniforms for the Nazi stormtroopers, black uniforms for the SS, and the Vienna police uniform, which was the dark green. But the Vienna police in the dark green uniforms also all had swastika armbands. And in dusk was falling, it was getting dark, and in dusk the dark green uniform with the swastika armband was hard to distinguish from the black of the SS. And I remember clearly wondering where and why the Vienna police had got so many swastika armbands so quickly.
So they were very well prepared.
Must have been well prepared. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting home when Schuschnigg, the Prime Minister, was speaking on the radio. And he started by saying that he had had no choice, but he had to give in to Hitler. And Hitler had demanded that the Nazi Party should become a proper legal party in Austria, which it hadn't been until then. And that Schuschnigg should hand over his office of Prime Minister, Chancellor, to a well-known Nazi, Seyss Inquart. So Schuschnigg told us in his radio speech that he had resigned and that this Nazi size Ingrid had been appointed to take his place.
A very historic broadcast you heard.
Yes. And then he went on to say that while he was speaking, German army units were crossing the border into Austria. And that he had instructed the Austrian army not to offer any resistance because he didn't want German brothers' blood, as he called it, to be spilled. The Austrians at the time were in two minds of whether they were Germans or not. But the story of the brothers' blood was very, very important. So there was no resistance. Which, with hindsight, I regard as a terrible mistake, because if there had been even the slightest bit of resistance, the history of Austria would have been quite different afterwards.
Yes, it would have made a difference post-war, wouldn't it?
Yes.
The view of the world towards Austria.
And during the war.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Because there was no resistance. The British government, amongst others, immediately recognized the annexation of Austria by Germany. And one of the consequences was that I and some 20,000 or 25,000 other Austrian exiles in this country were interned, and I spent 2 years during the war in internment camps in England and in Australia.
Yes, I'm going to ask you about that, if you would be good enough to bear with me. But once the German army had arrived, and the, you know, as you say, there was no resistance, how soon did things affect the Jewish population, and yourself and your family in particular?
All the German laws, called the Nuremberg Laws, about regulating the status of Jews in Germany, were immediately applied to Austria. So what took the Germans several years, from 1939 to 1938, to introduce in anti-Semitic measures were imposed in Austria within the first week of after the Anschluss. But the Austrians were supposed to be jubilant about, as they called it, the homecoming into the Reich. So the schools were given a holiday so that the school children and the teachers could have time to enjoy the the great pleasure of having become Germans. But when the schools reopened on the first day, the Jews were told during the first morning break to gather outside the entrance to the school. And we were told that we were no longer allowed to come to school. That was the first measure that affected me personally. More seriously, of course, was then all Jewish civil servants and people who had any sort of public posts were instantly dismissed. And in the professions, they were no longer allowed to practice. In the Jewish doctors were no longer allowed to practice, and Jewish lawyers were no longer allowed to practice. And it was made clear
how about your father's business? How was that affected?
Well, it was made clear to him that he would have to give it up. But at the same time, the German army, the Wehrmacht, came immediately. They knew precisely what he was manufacturing. And at that time, the German army relied and did so until well into the 1940s. They relied very much on horse-drawn transport. So building wagons was of great interest to the army. So the He had a couple of German officers sitting in his office and more German officers sitting in the factory to supervise what was being done. And building wagons included building gun carriages.
Did you witness any humiliation? I mean, that must have been humiliating for your father, I realize. But I wondered if one hears of these scenes of humiliation,
yes,
of Jewish people, their dignity undermined.
Jews were made to scrub the pavements in the street, told to bring their toothbrushes and so they could scrub the pavement with the toothbrush. And while they were doing it, they were kicked and spat upon. On the second day after the Anschluss, Hitler personally had arrived in Vienna. And it was said that there would be a great meeting where he would speak in the square in front of the Imperial Castle. this became a famous occasion, where 100,000 Viennese were supposed to have been present, and they all cheered Hitler wildly. And I remember that we had a maid who she was a perfectly nice woman, and she asked perfectly nicely whether she could have the evening off so she can go and listen to Hitler speaking. And when she came back, I asked her naively, "So what did he say?" She says, "I don't know, but it was beautiful," which was typical of a lot of us. They were not interested in what the Nazis really said and what they really did, but they were just enthusiastic about it.